everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of season 11 of Movie Drop Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 miniseries, Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me for the next three episodes are Joe and Cassie Tura, movie fans who wanted to come back for yet another season and another stint. So welcome back to both of you, Joe and Cass.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
It's an honor to be invited back.
Yes, thank you for having us again.
Well, you know, you did a good enough job, and you guys didn't freeze while standing at the doorway of the airplane. So, you know, I figured I'd give you another chance.
Oh, but I probably would.
Yes, same here. In real life, for sure.
Well, neither of you are part of Easy Company, so you don't have to worry about it from that perspective. And the truth is that, you know, they pretty much don't parachute in anymore. back in the 50s, they pretty much realized that it was more dangerous to parachute in than find other ways.
Very true, yes.
It's great visually in this movie, obviously, or in this movie series, and you know, any other ones that we've seen from that time, you know, where you have massive amounts of soldiers parachuting in, it's always great watching that. Mm. Especially talk about, you know, the Longest Day and then Bridge Too Far. You know, but they clearly do it the best here, which will come up the second part, which will be later this month. We'll get to that. We'll talk about the beauty of the way that the special effects does all the parachutes. We get a few here. You know, it is nice to see the way that they put this together. I mean, again, as you both know, and anyone listening, you know, part one is completely different than the rest of the other 9 parts of the movie, because here it's basically just the training aspects of it. You know, everything else is the battle itself. This is showing us how efficiently they were trained by Sobel, despite everyone hating him, which we will, I'm assuming, talk about over the next few days.
Yes, we will.
Yeah, I have little doubt about that. Exactly. So why don't you first both tell me and everyone else what's your background with the Band of Brothers?
I'll go first as the older one. So actually my wife and I watched this when it first came out on HBO, and we loved it, but honestly have not watched it since. And it's one of those where I wanted to get back to it, and I just never did.
And now I give you a reason to do so.
Yes, you did. And the funny thing was, this past summer, we do here in our co-op development, we do like a garage sale every year, and my upstairs neighbor was selling DVDs and Blu-rays, and it was like he had the set of Band of Brothers, and I was like, look at that, that's funny, Band of Brothers. And then
and you didn't even know about that you were going to be
no, I had no idea. So yeah, it was fine. I was like, wow, I should rewatch that again. I wonder if I should take his Blu-rays, but by the time I got back from shopping, it was gone. So
So you didn't get it. I thought you did get it. Oh, wow.
No, I could watch HBO Max. Like, I watch it for free, so it's all good.
Oh, okay. No, I thought it was going to be, you know, this great story of that you got them, you know, got the Blu-rays, and you decided that you were going to eventually watch them, and now, because of this, you decided to,
Just like last season, my story started going somewhere and then fizzled out, so yes.
Well, that's... That's Joe Tura for you.
Exactly. Yes. Everything fizzles out.
Not
my great Polish acting skills. Yes.
That's correct. That is correct. You and Jack Benny.
That's right.
Exactly. Okay. So I'm assuming you were able to find time to rewatch it.
Yeah. We Cassie and I finished it a few days ago.
Wow.
Yeah, it was my first time seeing it, but I'd heard of it because I'm in school to be a social studies teacher. So, you know, obviously I studied, I took classes about like World War II and everything. And so I'd heard of it. Plus Donnie Wahlberg's in it. Who doesn't love Donnie Wahlberg? So,
well, he did move to Boston, so I don't know.
But so it was really cool to see it like for the first time. And I thought it was really well done, and it was really good. So. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the one sort of complaint that that I have about movies like this is sometimes it's hard to tell who all the characters are because there's so many characters. You know, they're the
Yeah,
ones that stand out.
true.
That was something I struggled with. Like whenever they would say somebody's name, like I would be like, wait, which one is that again? Like I would have to like really think about it just because there were so many people.
Right, exactly. I mean, I know who a lot of them are, but you know, even in the next few days, we're going to talk about, you know, there are going to be quotes from people that I don't even know who it is. You know, like I couldn't tell you what it is. Some of them, most of them I can, but they're every so often I'm just going to say, and one of the guys says, and you
Yeah,
know, there's a
it is
couple of
very
them.
hard to keep track.
So episode six begins with the jump instructor giving out more info and ends with Winter showing his leadership skills once again. Finish things by getting a little bit of information about what they're doing in the jump school, but today we're gonna dive deeper into it. And the
I see what you
response
did there. Dive. Very good.
I didn't say jump. I couldn't say jump into it.
Well, you know,
I shouldn't say
tomato,
parachute.
tomato.
That's right. I should have said we should parachute into it, you know. The instructor says, I hope so. And then he starts explaining this will be the first of five exits from a C-47 aircraft set for today. So anyone who knows anything about Jump School and anyone who's read the book Band of Brothers, we know that these five jumps didn't all happen in one day. They were spread out over a few weeks of training and stuff like that. I guess just for the you know for the viewers, they just want to make it easier and just say you know they're gonna have five exits. At this, one of the things I really like about the way that they do this scene is that on the one hand they're showing us the instructor who's explaining things, and on the other hand they keep jumping back and forth with guys on the plane, you know, getting ready for their first, second, third, fourth, fifth jump, whichever it is, right? So we hear the jump master on the plane go, get ready, stand up, look up. And then we hear the instructor on the ground saying, upon completion of your final jump, you'll be certified paratroopers. And then we're back in the plane again, and it's check your equipment, sound off for equipment check. Nine okay, eight okay, seven okay, six okay, five okay, four okay, three okay, two okay, one okay. Now, you know, we get to see all the men as they're getting ready, and you know you see their faces. Some of them are eager, some of them are completely scared. You know, there's no way of knowing with that. And then we're back to the guy on the ground, and he goes, "There'll be many men jumping today, hopefully under deployed canopies." Now, I don't know if that's actually a funny joke. It that way. You know, it's the type of thing that you'd think that I guess it maybe it's the dark humor of why he would want to do that. I guess you
It's
could.
very dark, yeah.
It's very dark. You know, especially talking to you know hundreds of men that will be jumping and saying, well, we hope that that actually happens. You know, that your chutes open up. So I don't know. I mean the book describes the fact that the first death of a one of the men in Easy Company happened on December 13th, 1943, and that was Private Rudolf Dietrich of the 1st Platoon. That when they were in the middle of their training, his chute didn't open up, and he's actually he's not mentioned in the miniseries, obviously. And they don't allude to it at all, but it's interesting that you know, I mean, the book clearly mentions that he was the first one to, you know, the first of the easy men to give up their life. And you know, it's a known fact that you know, anyone who's seen the Bridge on the River Kwai, you know, the idea is that you know, you don't really have to train too much if you have to go into a dangerous situation and they have to throw you out of a plane, it's safer just to do it once. You know, as opposed to, you know, because of the probability that I think they say that people get injured after I think like three or four jumps or something like that. That's like the average. And that's just talking about injured, not even talking about anything more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
See,
I believe
no,
it.
that's not for me.
No,
That's not for me.
not a plane either.
Oh God, I have a deathly fear of heights, and gravity is very gravity is an honest thing. So yeah, I wouldn't never. I could never do it. Never, never. God bless those guys. Yeah.
I hate even flying on a plane. Jumping out of a plane? It's no. No, thank
Right. Yeah.
you.
There's a whole idea that why jump out of a perfectly good airplane? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Right.
that completely makes sense. You know. I mean, again, there is the whole idea that you know, these guys as paratroopers were getting paid more. It'd be to be able to do this dangerous feat, you know, or to train for it and then do it.
Well, that makes
You
sense.
know, so for
Yeah.
what was it? I think they said an extra $50 a month. So back then, you know, in the 1940s,
Yeah.
to be able to have another $50 to send back to your family during the war is not chump change, I guess you can say.
No. True.
You know, how much do you think $50 equates to today? $50 from 1943 is.
I'm gonna say like $412.
What? That's such a random number.
Well,
I
apparently
know.
you watch Price is Right. You know, you have to choose something that's
$50 back then. I feel like maybe like 600 today.
All right, well, Cassie got closer without going over. You know, if we're going to use
Oh.
the Price is Right analogy, $50 in 1943 is the equivalent of $938.73 today.
Wow.
Okay. So
Damn.
when you think
Wow.
about it from that perspective, these guys are getting paid an extra $1,000 a month. You know, there's no
Right.
reason why they wouldn't agree to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that.
Well, Cassie, you're going to the showcase. I'm
So
not.
okay, so you're sending her to be a paratrooper to get that extra $1,000.
Let's stick with the showcase. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Then we're back in the plane and we hear stand in the door. And then we see that Winters is the one who's standing in the doorway, and one of the guys turns to him, the jump master at the door says to him, "I guarantee you're gonna love it, Lieutenant." And he goes, "Go, go, go." And then we start seeing you know, all the guys jump out, which you know, again, it's nice that they're showing us how this training is being done, and also the camera shots are great. You know what I mean? Once we're in the air, you know, they show us basically camera shots from the perspective of the soldier who's you know, who's going down, who has parachuted down.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. I think that's Sobel, I believe, or it's supposed to be, I think.
Do we see Sobel now, or is it later that we see Sobel? Yeah, there is a place where we do see Sobel. Is that now? Yeah,
I thought he had
it
that
is. It is.
perspective. I
You're
could be
right.
wrong.
You're right. It's Sobel. We see Sobel.
Yeah.
We see how scared Sobel is with this whole thing, for sure.
Yes.
Right. No, yeah. That's right. The camera shot is from Sobel. I mean, even when they were calling out their numbers, I mean, we see that he's sweating and he's not ready for this type of thing. Yeah, which
No, very
yeah,
hesitant.
of
That's
course
right.
not. Which I find very interesting, the fact that the officers are learning to do this at the same time that all of the other soldiers are doing it. You know, you'd think that their training would have been separate. But I guess time
Yeah.
wise, they needed
Yeah.
to just rush things. So okay, you're already an officer because you've done X, Y, and Z. So we're just gonna now let you learn just like everyone else about
Also, probably save resources like fuel for the plane and stuff, I guess. Like, by having everybody learn
True,
at once.
but as we will see in the next few episodes, you know, the officers are the ones who are doing a lot of the training also. But this particular thing, their own officers are the ones who don't have this specialty, and they're learning it with them. You know, that's the thing that I found to be a little bit interesting by the way that they did it. But
well, it's probably a time crunch too to get everybody, you know, to
battle.
Well,
it's a time crunch, but this entire part of part one takes place over a period of a year. There's a hell of a lot of training that these guys are all going through.
Yeah, that's true too.
So,
well, I guess if they had to train the officers like separately, then that would take even longer. It would take longer than a year, I guess.
No, but I'm saying maybe they should have. Maybe the officers are usually trained. I guess part of it has to do with the fact that this was a new specialty at the time. So maybe
that's that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So I assume that's the reason that they're doing it then. So then, you know, he says, we hear the guy on the ground going, jumping from 1,000 feet AGL in sticks of 12 jumpers per aircraft. Yeah. Do either of you know what AGL is?
Above ground landing.
Above ground level. Perfect. Excellent. Nicely.
Wow. Close.
Wow. Nice, Dad.
that's great. And they're also telling us now that there's only going to be 12 guys in each aircraft. And then he continues to go, you just have to remember what you were taught. I guarantee gravity will take care of the rest.
It sure does.
Well, as long as your chute opens up from that perspective.
Right.
Well, then gravity will just act a little faster. That's all.
Well, I think gravity, you know, gravity works the same pull no matter what. It's just a question of whether you can stop the, you know, the how fast you're going, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, could be. And then we're back on the plane. Go, go, go. And, you know, we then see Sobel's face, and he goes, damn it. And then it's really interesting the way that they intersperse this next comment about about refusal, because the next thing is, gentlemen, rest assured, any refusals in the aircraft are at the door, and I guarantee you'll be out of the airborne. You know, and then we see that right after that, Sobel is the one who's getting ready to jump, and you know, you see how scared he is. Now, according to the book, there were only two men who froze up and refused to jump when they were doing all their training. One of them was a man named Private Joe Ramirez, who when he didn't really want to go, he moved to the back of the plane, but then after everyone else jumped, he decided that he wanted to jump. And they circled the plane around and let him jump a second time. And there's a quote in the book from another one of the men, Private Rod Stroll, who said that that took more guts than for a guy to go out on the first time. You know, the idea that everyone, you know, knew that this was the whole idea. So
I could see that.
Right. You know, they basically, it talks about in the book that most people, when they froze up, they wouldn't even take a second chance, or they wouldn't even be given a second chance. So the fact that he actually got, got a chance to jump again, you know, and that, as Cassie mentioned before about fuel consumption and stuff like that. I mean, the fact that they circled the plane around to let him go and jump again, that already says something too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they took away his $50.
Probably not.
For that. Oh,
okay. I don't think so. We get to see Sobel as he's standing in the doorway, and it looks as if he needs to be more or less pushed out. You know, it's not necessarily something that you would think that, you know, I think he's doing it just not out of fear what's going to happen, but out of fear that if he doesn't jump, what are people going to think of him?
Yeah. There's a lot of fear in Sobel, I think. He's an interesting character. Yeah. It's interesting also they got David Schwimmer to play him.
Exactly.
I mean, anyone that's ever seen any episodes of Friends can't help but think, oh my gosh, it's Ross.
That's right.
I mean,
because that is Ross if he was in the army.
No, Ross would not actually.
Well, Yeah, Ross wouldn't be that
Sadistic.
forceful, I don't think, with his orders and sadistic. Yeah, he would be more I mean, Sobel's a little awkward, but Ross would be 10 times more awkward. I mean, even when you first see him, in the first couple minutes. Well, first of all, I think when we were watching it, the first thing I said out loud was when he came on, I was like, "Pivot," because it looks like that's what he was going to say to everybody on the what is that, the greeting line, when they're the inspection line. Sorry. And then here, it's like they take these little moments like this where they try to make him sympathetic, and I get why, because he's just so easy to hate. So they try to make him sympathetic, and I don't know if it quite works, because every time you think it's going to work, he does something else, and it brings you back to, well, I hate him again. So,
It didn't make me feel sympathetic. I just was kind of thinking, I was like, he's like, not, I don't want to say like a fraud, but like, I don't know what else, what other word to use. Like, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I just don't think he's a particularly good leader
no, see,
of
that's the
this
difference.
team. Oh
There's something
no.
that we've discussed with. He's an amazing commander, but he's not a good leader. That sort of comes down to it.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it,
He
yeah.
was
Yeah.
able to, Sobel was able to train the men of Easy in ways that no one else would have been able to do, both in helping them all form a bond in their hatred for him, which we're getting a little bit of ahead of ourselves now, but it doesn't really matter because it's still
Yeah.
within these 5 minutes that we're
Yeah.
talking about it. But there is so much hate for Sobel at this point, but that's what brought
Yeah.
the guys together even more, you know, because they all could
Oh,
deal with
big
it.
time,
But on
yeah.
the other hand,
Yes.
he got them into such amazing shape to be able to do so many things that they did. You know, physically,
True.
I mean, the
Yeah.
book talks about the
Yeah.
fact that when they got to the paratrooper training, the men of Easy were in better shape than the instructors. You know, the
Huh.
instructors of the jump camp wanted them to go run a certain amount of, I don't remember the exact distance. And you know, by the end, the men of Easy were able to continue going, and the instructors were out of breath. You know, so they got to the point
Nice.
where the instructors were just not they said, okay, these guys we don't need to do any physical training with, you know, that type of thing. So I mean, I think one of the points of both the book and the miniseries is to show us that even though nobody liked Sobel, without Sobel there would be no Easy Company. There would be no Band of Brothers. I mean, obviously there's a lot, you know, it's not a statement that can be just held on its own. Obviously, you know, Winters has a lot to do with it, and all the men themselves. But my point, but what I'm saying is
Yeah.
that if Sobel wouldn't have trained them and treated them the way that he make mistakes like he did, then you know, the Easy Company we know from this story would not be the same.
That's
Yeah.
actually that's very very interesting. Yeah. Very
Yeah.
cool.
Yeah. And you know, then after Sobel jumps out, we actually get to see, as you mentioned before, we get to see the camera shot of, you know, the way that it looks, getting on the ground, towards the ground, and then the men landing on the ground also, and having to, you know, pull up their chutes and stuff like that. Get to see that these guys are, you know, as ready as they're going to be, you know, when it comes to having to deal with this. And then we see another shot of the men jumping a second time, and you know, we see that they're in better formation than they were before with that whole thing. So I like the way that they show that they're, you know, even that they were doing better and better as things moved along. The shot changes and we're in a mess hall, and we see everyone
Ah.
in dress uniforms, and we see Garnier, you know, chugging a beer, and everyone screams 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000, yay! And then we see that he had his jump wings inside of the beer glass, and he catches them in his teeth. And then he smiles and goes, "Hi-yo, Silver." So the little bit of a teaser that I wanted to talk about before is, according to the book, what percentage of men in Easy Company qualified in jumping from the plane, in during the parachuter training?
I thought you were going to ask what percentage like beer,
No, sorry.
which is probably, 99, except for winners. I would say 65%.
Cassie, what do you think?
I'll go with, oh, man, I don't know. I guess I'll be hopeful. I'll say 80%. I'll be
Okay, you were
generous.
both way, way, way off.
Oh my
Behold,
gosh, is it like
no, it's
15?
94.
Oh, excellent.
Wow.
Nice, good.
94% of the men in Easy made it, got paratrooper accreditation, I guess you could call it that, which is a record that still stands today. Think about it. After
Wow.
80 was 82
That's
years, nobody, no, there's no unit, there's no company, I guess, that has 94% of their men that qualify for jump training. That's just amazing.
Crazy. That's awesome.
very impressive.
I thought so too. That's why I wanted to bring it up.
Ah.
Because I thought it was pertinent. Yeah. Oh, sorry. You know what? I want to correct myself. It was 94% of the men of the 506th. Not just of Easy. That's even more impressive.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay. So we're talking about the entire battalion.
Yeah, that is, it's crazy.
Really is. And then we get to see the various men partying, getting ready, happily finishing up their parachute training, which again they definitely truncated it here, but there's no reason why they shouldn't have truncated it, except
Yeah.
the fact that that's not the way it happened. But besides that, when they finish their while they're in there, we see Percante walk over to Martin, and he goes, "If you had class or style like me, somebody might mistake you for somebody." And Martin looks over to him and goes, "You mean like your sergeant?" And he looks at him.
Ah.
Percante said, "I'm just kidding." He breaks a smile and then he goes, "Congratulations, Martin." Get a shot of more men, so we have George Luz and Joe Toy. And Luz comes over to Toy and goes, Corporal Toy, there will be no leaning in my company. Are those dusty jump wings? How will you slid the Huns with dust on your jump wings?" Now, again, he's obviously trying to make fun of Sobel with this whole thing. And then he goes, "Luz, just get me a drink." He goes, "Hell of an idea, Joe." Then he brings him a drink. He goes, "There you go."
I love that he just pulls it out of nowhere, almost like a magician.
It's well, maybe he has magical powers.
Well, look, yeah. Now it's funny, the actor that plays Luz, the Cassie, who did you think that was? You thought it was Kevin Connolly, right?
Oh yeah, I thought it was the guy from Entourage, right? No. Or was that the other
Yeah,
guy?
no, yeah, you did, because I thought it was Sam Rockwell, and you're like, no, it's the guy from Entourage. I think
And we were both
it's kind of like a blend. Yeah, we know. It's like a blend of the two of them, but yes.
Yeah, no, that's Rick Gomez.
Rick Gomez, yes.
He plays George Luz.
And Kirk Acevedo as Toy, I love. He's great in everything. I love him.
Yeah, I like him here too. And you're right. He does just pull it out. No, he pulls it from the table behind him, I guess you could say. So it's sort of,
He probably had it there ready, and but
right.
yeah,
That's
still.
right. And then he goes,
That's the kind of friends I need. Just, hey, look, a beer
"There
magically
you go."
appears.
In other words, if you ever find a genie, that's going to be one of your three wishes, that you always have a beer on tap.
Probably, yes. That and be able to parachute out of a plane.
You would waste
And we'll come
you
up
would
with the
waste
third one.
your wish on that. Someone once told me, I read it
No,
in a
no,
story once.
no.
It might have even been a joke. I don't remember, but that the best thing to ask for is that instead of asking for like $1 million or whatever it is, that whenever you reach into your pocket to pay for something, you will have exact change. So
Huh, I
therefore,
like that.
oh my gosh, I
therefore you
love that.
theoretically can buy anything,
Huh.
and there's your magic for you.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'm gonna write that one
That's
down
right.
too.
And then he says, 3 miles up, 3 miles down. And then we hear in the background, Tan Hut. And we you can hear that that's Sobel's voice. It sounds like he's the one who's screaming. And then everyone, stands at attention. And then Colonel Singh comes in, played by Dale Dye. And he says, laddies, paratroopers, good evening, easy company. And everyone goes, evening, sir. And he says, parachute infantry is a new concept in military history, but the 506 will forge that new concept into victory. Yes, sir. I want you to know I'm damn proud of every one of you, and you deserve this party. And then one of the characters, Grant, actually brings him a beer, and he goes, thanks, Sergeant Grant. And he goes, sir. He says, so I want you to have fun.
Again, there's the
and remember our motto.
Magic beer.
Yeah, more magic beer. There you go. And I want you, yeah. That's that, so I want you to have fun and remember our motto. Curry! Curry! So one of the things that is great here is that, you know, they show us that Sink is sort of, easing up on everybody and stuff like that. But the book gives a few examples of things that he was very upset about. One of the things that they don't talk about here is that, you know, after the men got all their training, they were given a few weeks off to be able to go back home, I guess, say their last goodbyes to their family before getting shipped off. And they told everyone to be back at a certain time. And, back in the 1940s, and especially during wartime, some of the men had more trouble getting back because of train schedules and whatever. And Sink decided that he was going to show everyone that you need discipline for this type of thing. And he went and basically kicked out a whole bunch of guys that showed up late, even if they had good excuses. You know, just for being shown, yeah. Just for showing up late, they were kicked out of the airborne and sent to, regular army and stuff like that. So again, Sink is never really shown here as a formal disciplinary, even though, again, it's ironic that Dale Dye is playing him because that's what he did to all the men, you know, by being a disciplinarian to them during their during the boot camp that these actors all had to go through. I just think that's very funny. And then we get a shot now where we're in the field. Tells us that it's June 23rd, 1943, Camp McCall, North Carolina. And, we see the men are in the field, and I love this first shot of Sobel, David Schwimmer, where he peeks up. It looks like a cartoon character where he's like peeking up behind something, and you see his face that he just looks really, really distraught and doesn't know what's going on. And it's also funny that he's wearing gloves and nobody else is wearing gloves.
Moment.
That definitely is. And then he turns around and he goes, Petty, map, come on. And, the soldier comes over to him and brings him a map and he looks at it and he goes, oh, Christ, we're in the wrong position. And then he says it again, we're in the wrong position. And then Winters comes over to him and he goes, we're in a textbook position for an ambush, sir. And he gets this like dirty look from Sobel. You know, Sobel doesn't need anyone to tell him whether he's wrong or right. Even though in this particular case, we know he's not right.
Worst map reader ever.
But again, I think this scene is great from the perspective that even at this early point in the miniseries, they're showing us that as inept as Sobel is as a leader, Winters is the one who still knows what's going on, and you know, something is going to come of that, you know, in the future type of thing. So I like the way that they do that. You know, it's like a slight little Easter egg about what's going to be in the future.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Good setup. Good setup.
So that's all I actually have to say about this particular 5 minute section. Do either of you have anything else you wanted to add?
Cass? I mean, just like what you were saying, like the juxtaposition between Winter and Sable?
Sobel.
Duh. Like the juxtaposition there, like it makes you root for I feel like in the beginning I was like, why isn't Winter like really in charge? Like, why is it Sobel? And like it makes you like want to see him like lead them. And then as time goes on and you see him, you know, get more and more in charge. I don't know. I just really liked that.
Well, yeah, you don't really have a choice. there is the whole idea
Yeah, because
of
it's not. I mean, you never know. Maybe there's some big David Schwimmer fan out there who's like, why is he playing this bad character? I don't know, something like that. Somebody's like really rooting for David Schwimmer to succeed in this his character, you know?
It's very possible. Definitely a possibility. Right, so
My the only other thing I had, I'm sorry, was one of my favorite moments in this whole section is you could see the discipline, and it's filmed really well. And like in the mess hall, when some of these guys are obviously stinking drunk, and they all snap right to attention once the colonel comes in, and it's like really well done.
again, that goes with what's the phrase, muscle memory. They know that doesn't matter what you're doing right now, you gotta stand up right now.
And there's a good shot of Donnie Wahlberg right in the middle with a really bad haircut. Yes.
That's true. All right, so today's segment is Band Brand, where my guests will give their favorite movie bands. So we'll do this snake style, like we did last time when you were both on together. So you
Okay.
guys can decide who's
Cool.
gonna go first today.
All right, Cassie, I'll let you go first.
Okay, so I just want to say my honorable mention is the band Big Time Rush from Nickelodeon, because Dad told me that's more of a TV show band. So they're an honorable mention because they were just a part of my childhood, and I still listen to Big Time Rush songs. And they actually made a comeback, like they're back and performing together again, which is really cool. And I know friends who like went to the concert, they said it was amazing. So go Big Time Rush. But then my real number five is the Hex Girls from Scooby-Doo, and they were in the Scooby-Doo movies too, so they count here. And I just think, like, seeing them, like, what little girl who watched Scooby-Doo didn't want to be one of the Hex Girls? Like, they're really cool, they're very fashionable, they're awesome, and yeah, I really like them. I think that they're really epic and
Okay,
cool.
that's fair. All right,
All right.
Joe,
Yeah.
what's your number five?
Well, I have no idea who the
Yeah,
Hex Girls are.
neither do I, but it's a different generation.
All right, so this was a little tough because I kind of tried to separate out movies versus TV. So my movie honorable mentions would be Stillwater from Almost Famous and the legendary Otis Day and the
Okay.
Nights from National Lampoon's Animal House. But if you're going to put in TV, you got the B Sharps from The Simpsons. You have, well, I don't want to say one and ruin Cassie's, because it's on Cassie's list. You have the Lords of the Underworld from South Park. And of course, though, you have the Ruddles, which was the Beatles parody, the Prefab Four, which was one of the greatest TV specials ever. Oh my God. The Ruddles, All You Need Is Cash. Just start to finish, amazing. The songs are great. And then, of course, you have the Banana
Oh.
Splits, which is the second best TV theme song ever. The first being, of course, the 60s Spider-Man animated series.
Spider-Man,
But since
Spider-Man.
we're
Sorry, I
exactly
know, but
have
I know the
that,
banana split's awesome.
oh, it's so good. But anyway, let's get to number five. And my number five, I think you'll appreciate, Rob, is The
Yeah, of
Wonders
course.
from That Thing You Do. Now, if they only do one song and they do it 65 times in the movie, who cares? The song is so catchy that, and just the byplay between the band members is great also. So that's my number five. And my number four is another amazing, amazing movie that I would recommend to anyone except for my wife, who hates this movie. And that is Sex Bob Omb from Scott Pilgrim versus the World. The songs are great, and it's just so much fun. Like the way they fit in the way Edgar Wright f just fits the music in just works perfectly in that movie. So that's my number
Okay,
four.
very cool. Cassie, what's your number four?
My number four is Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem from The Muppets. I think that's what Dad was gonna say for
Yes.
me, but they're also in
Yes,
movies. So I think really cool. I love The Muppets. I mean, who doesn't? And now they're gonna have the ride at Disney World. I mean, it sucks Aerosmith's going, but Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem are pretty cool too. And what gets closer to Aerosmith than that? So, I just think that they're awesome and I love the Muppets.
Okay.
So,
Animal, best
for
drummer
sure.
ever.
Of course.
For sure. All right. And number
And,
three.
yeah, so I actually found out the name of this band last night because I was thinking, I was like, who does the, what's the name of the Cantina band from Star Wars? And it's Figurin Dan and the Modal Nodes. I mean, Star Wars is awesome. And who doesn't love that Cantina? Yeah. Like, what person doesn't think like Star Wars music and kind of like think that,
Of course.
So, yeah, that's my number
All right,
three.
that is great. But I mean, there is another Star Wars band also in Jedi, but that's Nice Noodles.
Yes. Love size noodles.
Well, in the what was it, the special edition that they did in 97, they changed it a bit. I still like the original better.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, Joe, what's your number three?
All right, my number three is I assume people have heard of this one, and that would be Spinal Tap. It's one of the most quotable films ever. The songs are meant to be parodies, but they're actually some of them are really good. And I have both CDs. If you listen to the second one, it actually there's some excellent songs on it. Still have not seen the sequel. I will get
Yeah, I
to
haven't
it.
seen the sequel yet either.
Yes, my number two. It's a movie. If it's ever on, if I'm flipping around cable when there's nothing to watch, and I see this on, I put it on. I'm done. Doesn't matter where I am in the movie. I have to watch the entire thing, and that is The Blues Brothers.
I was actually expecting that to be higher on your list, but that's fine.
Oh no! I well,
All right, yeah, it's fine.
it
No,
almost. It almost made number one.
don't
I
spoil
don't
it.
want to
Don't
ruin.
spoil
I
it.
don't want to ruin
No,
number one.
not at all.
But the thing about the Blues Brothers, I actually back in my salad days, I used to perform some songs at this bar in Middle Village, Queens, with my friend Herb, and we were basically part of the act. Where our friend Frank was like a one-man band, but we got up. We were like famous for doing Soul Man, and my signature song there was like one of them was Hey Bartender. So, yeah, good times. The Blues Brothers always have a big place in my heart.
Makes sense. All right, Cassie, what is your number two?
So my number two, I feel like I don't know if you guys are gonna know what this is, but it's Lemonade Mouth from the Disney Channel original movie Lemonade Mouth. Just because any kid who's from my generation, I guess, and watch Disney Channel, they know Lemonade Mouth. They have Lemonade Mouth songs on their playlists. I mean, like Determinate was like the song I feel like that like it was famous on Disney Channel. And so just Lemonade Mouth, it has Bridget Mendler, who is now like a space scientist. Like she went to Harvard and everything. She's awesome now. And just she's in the band. Naomi Scott, who played, I think she played Jasmine in the Disney Channel live action Aladdin movie. Like, I don't know, this movie like jump started careers, and it's also just like such a good band. Like they all mesh very well together. So love Lemonade
Very
Mouth.
cool. All right. And you're
Yeah.
number one.
Dad thinks you're gonna get a kick out of my number one. So
Maybe.
what the first thing he said when it was fictional bands and singers, I was like, oh my God, number one, Powerline from a Goofy movie. I mean, who did a Goofy movie, awesome movie, Powerline? Who doesn't love Eye to Eye, Stand Out? Amazing songs, amazing character. Love him. And it's my dream to someday meet him at Disney World or Disneyland, but he doesn't come out much. But I'll meet Powerline one day.
Okay.
Really cool.
Rob, I have no doubt that Powerline will end up being the number one on at the end of
That's
the
what I think
season.
too.
Yes.
Maybe it'll be number two. All right. And Joe, what is your number one?
All right. So my number one, I alluded to my friend Herb Griffin. We watched this movie again back in our salad days. Probably I think in was it high school, college maybe. And it's a bona fide cult classic. Anyone who has seen it loves it. And that is the movie Tapeheads, and the band is the Swanky Modes. It's a super quotable movie. Again, like I said, it's a complete cult classic. John Cusack, Tim Robbins, fantastic in it. Don Cornelius is amazing. But Sam Moore and Junior Walker as the Swanky Modes, the songs are great. The performances are fantastic. We actually, the Swanky Modes became our softball team name not soon after that, and no one had any clue what it meant. So after a while, Herb got tired of telling people what it meant. So he said, yeah, it's a fancy way of dressing. So, yeah.
Okay.
So that's my absolute number one, the Swanky Modes. And anyone that hasn't seen Tapeheads, go out and see it.
You know, I have a feeling I've never seen it. And that's a difficult feat for you to find.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm sure you have seen it.
I don't remember seeing it. Let's put it this way. I know that... I have not seen it in the last 11 years. That I could tell you for sure. If I've ever seen it before that, I don't think so.
Definitely worth the rewatch.
1988. I will definitely have to rewatch it because who knows? Maybe you'll make my top five. Eventually.
Oh, I can only hope.
Yes, according to what I just checked, I've never seen it. So. I will have to check it out sooner than later. How's that? And I will let you know what I thought of the show.
Sounds good.
All right. So now we have the Daily Game, which is name that World War II movie.
Oh, boy.
So, like last season, I'm just going to give you a little bit of hints as to what movie I'm talking about, and you have to try and guess what it is, what movie this is. Who knows? It might be, a Polish Joseph Turow movie. It is possible. It is on that list. It is on the list.
I have two chances.
Yes, you have two chances first of all, you have three chances over the next 3 days, but you have two chances today.
Oh, okay.
No,
yes.
I'm saying you every day, so you have two chances because it could be either of them. That's what you're saying. Well, only
gotcha.
One of them,
so that's six chances total.
Yes, but only one of them has Joseph Turin in it. So.
Oh, that's right. All right,
so let's spin the wheel and around the wheel goes, and let's see where it's going to land. Okay, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this one. Let's put it this way. I'll preface this with by saying that I'm sure that you've seen this movie, Joe. There's no question about it.
Okay.
It is a movie from 1967.
Right? Oh, if you would have said 63, I would have just fell on the floor laughing.
Me too. If that was it, I would know. But it's from 1967, and it's about a group of... tough soldiers who...
I got it.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Dirty Dozen. Yes,
excellent. There you go. You see, it's hard to do that one without saying Prisoners.
Right.
Okay. So that was great. Perfect. I like
nice.
It.
Nice. Awesome. Such a great movie.
I had to do no work, and I get some credit. I was here for moral support for that one.
Yes. Okay. Yes. We'll add that to your list of movies to watch. Fair.
All right, cool.
See, now you just drop down your chances of getting the Polish Joseph Turow down to four chances. Yes, jump down from six to four.
Ah,
there you go.
That's okay.
Again, randomly it might happen. It did happen last season. It might happen now. You never know. Okay, so would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Okay, yes, you can check out my blog, Von Luger's Butter. Yes, named after The Great Escape. And I am wearing my Great Escape t-shirt today in honor of the World War II miniseries that we're going after. going over. That is at torahfish.wordpress.com, or you can catch me on the socials and especially Letterboxd. Love Letterboxd. Cass?
So I'm on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, not Twitter /X, whatever it's calling itself. And someday I'll be on Dad's blog, I hope, if he'll ever let me write something for it. So, yes. Yeah, that's kind of it.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can send me an email to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. And you can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Instagram. So, until tomorrow, hooray!
Hooray!